right. My name is Lucas. If we haven't met yet, I look forward to meeting you after the service. How's the sound back there? Is it sounding pretty good? Okay, good. Cool. Nice. Well, like so many of us, it was a bit of an intense week for me. I had a lot that I was processing through. I had a lot of conversations with people that told me all these stories about near misses. I had lots of friends that, you know, should have been right there at the site of the bombing, and they weren't for various reasons. I have friends that actually were there, but they were unhurt, that were able to actually to help out and kind of be a part of making a better situation for others. And so I'm definitely really thankful that, you know, I don't know of anybody that was hurt. And I haven't actually heard one person tell me that they knew somebody that was hurt from what happened this week. And yet, you know, I was very involved in, like, paying attention to what's going on. That's kind of my personality anyway. I look at the news pretty much every day and try to find out, like, what's going on in the world. So this week, I don't know if you are into it, but for me, my senses were overloaded. I was, like, way into it. And I think during the manhunt on Friday, I was, like, refreshing my computer screen every 10 seconds to see if they caught him yet and what's going on. And at one point during this week, though, I took a step backwards and said, okay, let me just, like, notice what's going on inside of me and what's going on in other people's. How are we experiencing the tragedy of this week? How are we reacting to it all? And what was interesting was that everyone, I was mostly even focusing on seeing what was happening on Facebook, but also just in my conversations, people were having very different reactions than each other. And I was looking at that, and I realized, actually, I could connect with each one of those different people. Right? It was a surprise that me, myself, I had a lot of conflicted emotions inside of myself. It was like this smorgasbord of experiences in myself. And so I was thinking back to some of the feelings I had and some things I noticed. One of those things I noticed people had was a sense of shock. Like, why did this happen? You know, I can't believe this happened. You know, what motivated these people to do such a thing? I think that's probably the main question I'm still asking right now. It's like, why did this happen? Another thing that a lot of people were expressing was a sense of sadness. And certainly, you know, for the people that died and for the families. But I think also just a sense of sadness, like, you know, this type of thing can happen in our world. You know, like, this is craziness. And you know, even a sense of sadness for the group of people that, you know, as we saw this week, it so often happens, certain people got targeted, or certain groups of people or religious groups kind of got targeted. And so there's this, like, I think the main feeling for me over this whole week was a sense of sadness. I don't know if you felt that. Some people were just really curious, you know, just obsessively trying to find out what's the latest, what's the breaking news, you know, who did what and how did it happen. And so I think that a lot of my news kind of search was based on that. And then some people were happy. You know, particularly at the end of the week, as, you know, they caught the second brother, there's a sense of, like, okay, well, they're not on the loose anymore. You know, our world, or at least our region, is a little bit safer because of that. And we could go about our business. And hopefully people that were affected by this, you know, directly can heal from it. I also noticed, I don't know if you saw this, but there was also this sense, like, people were looking at this as an opportunity to see the world from a different perspective. You know, it was, you pointed out that, you know, on the same day, on Monday, there was a bombing in Baghdad that killed, like, 27 people and 2 children. In a sense, like, oh, wow, like, look at the world and a lot of people that are dealing with this stuff even more frequently. And there was a sense, like, yeah, that really sucks, you know? Like, yeah, that's happening. And I tend to think of myself as a citizen of the world to some extent, you know? So I, like, pay attention to BBC News. It kind of gives me a bigger picture than United States News. But then I noticed that some people seemed to push that really, really far and started, like, kind of judging or, like, getting angry at people that were concerned about what happened in Boston, you know, as if that was really bad, that was wrong. And I found myself thinking, well, you know, I guess in some ways maybe I was thinking that, maybe I was judging or judging myself, I guess, in the case. But really, when I hear other people say this stuff, I just get mad at them. I just judge them as heartless, you know, like, because, you know, it's a really tragic thing, and people have a right to be concerned about their own safety and the safety of their region or their family or friends or things like that. And then I noticed that some people just were just totally unaffected by this. I don't know if you know anybody. I had one friend I was talking to. I said, you know, how are you dealing with this? He's like, oh, actually, I don't know anything about it. I heard there was something happened in Boston. I didn't look into it. Just totally unaware. But then other people, you know, they were aware, but they actually had to kind of release some of the pressure of it. You know, like so some like goofiness or just laughter kind of came out. And I think that was, you know, both those things I kind of understood. I had one friend that was very emotional all week on Facebook. He kept on posting about this. He lives in Boston. He lives in Watertown. And it seems like by the time he got to Friday, whenever he himself was on lockdown in his house with his four kids and wife, he's always like, you know, kind of downbeat emotions were all spent. And so all day long, it was just goofy posts, you know. Maybe it was the only way he could deal with, like, being in that situation, being in lockdown all day. But it was all about wanting waffles. So he's like, you know, can my wife make me waffles? And his wife and him were both on Facebook having this conversation about waffles. And, like, can, like, the please airdrop waffles to us, you know. And so I understand that need to be a little lighthearted, you know. And, of course, who doesn't like waffles? So, you know, I understand all that. But I started thinking, okay, what's the right way to respond to this? And I think it's obvious. I don't think there really is one right way. You know, I'm happy with the hodgepodge of emotions that I've kind of gone through. And so maybe I don't have anything specific to help with this processing of what happened this week. However, I do think that some reactions are better than others, you know. And it seemed like some people just seem to react better. Like, you know, whenever life throws tough things, like specifically like this week or in general, you know, they don't get fazed by it as much as other people. They don't get, you know, kind of taken by surprise. They're able to work through it quicker or deal with it well. And even in the midst of some trouble, some people seem to thrive. Like, they actually do okay. They're actually even, they see, like, it's like making their life better in one way or another. So what I want to talk today, I think, is, you know, sure, maybe it's helpful for us thinking about what happened this week in Boston and, you know, extreme international situations. But I think maybe it's also helpful for us in personal extreme situations and also in the daily troubles that we all have, thousands of things, minor things every day that we have to deal with. So this is the fourth week of a series that we've been doing called Things Are Better Than You Think. And our focus has been on this prayer book in the Old Testament in the Bible. It's a bunch of poems and songs and prayers called Psalms. And what we're looking into it today to help figure out is that how to have not just actually a life in the midst of troubles, and not even just even like a good life, you know, but actually have a great life. How to actually experience amazing and goodness in our life in the midst of real life, in the midst of all the difficulties that we have today. And today, really today, versus like in that future date whenever things are going to be better and we get all our stuff together and we're okay, how to actually get good things today. The psalm that we're looking at, it's going to be inside your half sheet. It will be also on the screen. It's Psalm number 34. And it starts off with this all-out celebration of God. You'll follow along with me here. It says, I will praise the Lord at all times. I will constantly speak his praises. I will boast only in the Lord. Let all who help us take heart. Come, let us tell the Lord's greatness. Let us exalt his name together. And as you read that, it seems like it's a person that has just unbelievably problem-free life. You know, he has nothing going wrong. It's all praise, no complaints. It's all good. But there's actually a hint that maybe not everything is perfect. There's a sense of, well, the helpless should take heart, as if like maybe that's a place he's been before. And in fact, it turns out to be the case. The tradition around this psalm is that it's a poem written by David. David was the legendary king, this amazing, you know, king in Israel about 3,000 years ago. And as you read at the very beginning, it says, this little preamble, it says, the Psalm of David regarding the time that he pretended to be insane in front of Abimelech, who sent him away. And so the story goes is that, David was this up-and-coming leader, and he was, you know, having all his victories, and everybody thought that he was going to be, you know, the chosen person by God to be the next king. And of course, the current king didn't like that. You know, the current king was Saul, and he was like, I'm going to kill you. He starts hunting after him. And so David has to run and goes to the neighboring kingdom of Gath. And while he's in Gath, the king of that nation hears about all these stories of renowned fighting, and he thinks, oh, this guy's a threat to me as well. And so now David's in trouble over there. And so David pretends to be insane so that he could kind of get out of the situation, and it works. So the king of Gath thinks this guy's a lunatic, I'll just send him away. And then David writes a psalm. And so you think, whatever is prompting him to kind of make this all-out praise of God, this kind of like, wow, I love God, God's so awesome kind of poem, is coming from a place of challenge and coming from a place of, like, you know, this context of being exiled and being on the run for his life. It's not a perfect life. It's not an easy life. It goes on to say, I prayed to the Lord, and he answered me. He freed me from all my fears. Those who look to him for help will be radiant with joy. No shadow of shame will darken their faces. In my desperation, I prayed, and the Lord listened. He saved me from all my troubles. For the angel of the Lord is a guard. He surrounds and defends all who fear him. Taste and see the Lord is good. Oh, the joys of those who take refuge in him. Fear the Lord, you his godly people, for those who fear him will have all they need. Even strong lions sometimes go hungry, but those who trust in the Lord will lack no good things. And David is talking about this great life that I was pitching you. You know, a life that is free from fears, free from shame, you know, lacking no good thing, has everything that he needs. He's radiant with joy. He's just having this sense that God's protecting him. This big, powerful, good God is protecting him. And yet he's experiencing that in the context of lots of troubles, you know, having to pretend to be insane, having to run for his life. As he says, fear is desperation and troubles. And later he even calls it brokenheartedness and a crushed spirit. I wonder what is the secret of life that he has? You know, he understands something that I think is not obvious to us as we're going through the troubles of life. Let's finish up the psalm. It says, come, my children, listen to me, and I will teach you to fear the Lord. Does anyone want to live a life that is long and prosperous? Then keep your tongue from speaking evil and your lips from telling lies. Turn away from evil and do good. Search for peace and work to maintain it. The eyes of the Lord watch over those who do right. His ears are open to their cries for help. For the Lord turns his face against those who do evil. He will erase their memory from the earth. I forgot, one of the emotions that I saw a lot of people have that I had as well was anger, you know. And I felt like, well, how do I handle anger? I think as a child I was taught that maybe anger is bad or maybe ungodly or something like that. And certainly I think the Bible has some things to say about maybe a bad kind of anger. But I think particularly when you look in the Psalms, there is like this kind of anger that seems to be good. And I just saw like a lot of my friends posting some angry comments. I had one friend post something about, you know, hey, I don't like to swear on Facebook, but I can't believe this happened and this and that and the other thing. And then the very next post by this person was, and by the way, Lay's Chips has this new flavor, chicken and waffles, and I really like it. And I just thought, you know, well, again, you know, that light in the mood kind of thing had no connection to my other friend either. But it's waffles. It comes back to waffles. But all I'd say is, but anger, you know, it was an appropriate emotion as well. He will erase their memory from the earth. The Lord hears his people when they call to him for help. And as I think about this, I think also that anger, as it tends to work for me well as I put it towards the devil rather than towards a person, just to say. But the Lord turns his face against those who do evil. He will erase their memory from the earth. The Lord hears his people. They call to him for help. He rescues them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. The righteous person faces many troubles, but the Lord comes to the rescue each time. For the Lord protects the bones of the righteous. Not one of them is broken. Calamity will surely overtake the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be punished. But the Lord will redeem those who serve him. No one who takes refuge in him will be condemned. And so some things that jump out to me real quickly is, you know, that David is asking for help from God, and that God seems to be listening and responding. He also seems to think fearing God is an important thing as well. And then there's also a sense of like this attitude he has of hopefulness, you know, when you would think despair would have been the thing that he was kind of think about a little bit more. And so I think those three things are secrets to how he gets this great life. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more a bit. But before I do, I want to think about like what most of us, I guess, at least if you're like me, what we tend to do when we face problems on our own, right? I'm calling this common problem-solving techniques, or just, you know, problem-solving on your own. And here's the first thing that I think, at least I tend to do, is let fear and worry take over your thoughts. Let fear and worry take over your thoughts. So if you want to fill in the blank in your half sheet, feel free to do that. And so as I think about this, actually, you know, David's, I guess, multinational, life-threatening situation isn't that far away from the experience of what people are having happen this week with the Boston bombings, you know. People's lives were lost, you know. Men that were doing evil were loose, and people were running for their lives and hiding, and it was like a really horrible situation. And I think for me, at least, I think I felt some fear in it, even from a distance. I just felt like, well, you know, I found out some people I knew were down there, and that's scary. And then I think just in general, a sense of like, well, if this could happen to like the young boy, Martin Richard, you know, an 8-year-old boy just watching a race, if this could happen to him, you know, man, how could you know, even my own family be safe? I have an 8-year-old, you know. It just makes me feel like it's a scary world, you know. And again, some of those emotions come up, some of that anger come up. Like, man, this someone just put a bomb next to him and walked away. Like, it's just really, really scary. I think for me, actually, a closer experience of this whole thing, rather than I wasn't down there in Boston, but I think I've been in some situations in Jamaica that were somewhat scary. I remember one actually happened when I wasn't in Jamaica, but my brother was in Jamaica. My brother and I were helping start a school and a sports gym in this town of Trenchtown in Jamaica, which had a history, had some problems, had some gang violence. And one day my brother went down there to put in some lights into the gym, and he heard some gunshots, and some kids came around, and they walked down to where the gunshots were. And my brother found this leader, a don of a gang, dead. And my brother knew him. They were talking, they were becoming friends. And this guy was killed by his own bodyguard. And in that area, it was not just like a gang violent thing. It was a political thing. And so this actually erupted into the whole nation having riots and fires, and Trenchtown itself, you know, got barricaded off. It got locked down, and my brother was out before that happened. But it was a really scary situation for days. Other people died. And I remember talking to my brother and just being afraid for him and being afraid for other people we knew in the community. And I prayed about it, and I felt like God was saying, oh, you have to go down there. I'm like, I got to go down there? That's crazy. What am I going to do? I'm not, you know, it's stupid. But I just felt like I should go down there. And so I did. I you know, I drove to the airport, and we hit some really bad traffic in New York City, as expected. But, you know, it was worse than expected, and couldn't get to the airport. I missed my flight. I came back to home, and I talked to my brother, and he says, actually, now the airport is on lockdown, or at least they're not letting people leave the airport because, you know, the road to town is all, like, you know, booby-trapped, and there's people looting cars and all this kind of craziness. I'm like, I can't believe that. I almost was in that situation. And so I just started praying, and my brother started praying, and then he had some friends down there. They all started praying. And they felt like God say something, I guess, kind of similar to what I felt like God was saying to me, which was to go. So they got out of the house. They started walking towards Trenchtown. And all of a sudden, other people started coming out of their house and joining them. And they're all just walking down the street praying and singing to God. And before you know it, like, thousands of people came out. And they're all walking right into Trenchtown. And so now they're walking past the soldiers and the tanks and, you know, then up to these barricades. And the gunmen are on the other side, but they've just removed the barricades. And it's just all peaceful. And so then they called down the political leaders from the rival political groups, and they had this treaty, and they did this, like, you know, candlelight vigil, and my brother's all over the news. It was like this incredible event. I just think, man, yeah, like, in scary, big situations like that, it's easy just to be afraid and, like, not know what to do. You can't do anything. But actually, with God, actually, you can do something. You never know. And that's not just in big things, but also just in small things. Again, you know, just thinking about my kids, and I often feel afraid for them and for the physical safety, but also like their emotional safety or how well they're going to do in life, you know, like how well am I doing as a parent for them. It's easy for that just to kind of overtake you and just become your like experience of life. But it seems like God is offering something better than that, than just that. Another option, I think, for us when we're going through tough things is, it's a winning approach, blame others for our troubles and stir up strife. This psalm actually breaks his rhythm of his conversation in some ways, and then goes right after some like really direct advice about how to watch what words we use in the midst of trouble and how to try to make and maintain peace. He says this: keep your tongue from speaking evil and your lips from telling lies. Turn away from evil and do good. Search for peace and work to maintain it. I think David just knows that it's normal. It's just a natural thing for us to do whenever we're facing hard times, to start looking for someone to blame and start talking about, you know, who did what and talk bad about them. And or at least like, just let people know that it wasn't us. You know, we're not the one to blame. We're not the one that did something bad. And it is normal. We just take out our negative feelings on someone. I have a family member has a fortunate experience of going through a divorce, and it was just an ugly one. And I know both sides, and I'm more connected to one side than the other, but I know the situation, and I know they both have problems. And in their case, I think they had some serious problems, each of them. But when I talk to them, all I hear is about the problems of the other person. They're never talking about their own problems or how, you know, they had their part to play. It's just totally demonizing, like it's all their other people's fault. And I think that's just normal. I think even this week, as we're kind of getting the stories about what happened with the bombing, you know, it was appropriately pointed out that some of the U.S. news stations were, you know, kind of stereotyping and you know, doing some prejudice against certain ethnicities or certain religious groups. And I just know, like, you know, it's so easy to do, you know, because we're trying to find out why, we're trying to find out who, but it's just so easy to go down this road to actually look into blame it on somebody else. And then finally, I think the thing that we naturally do if we're not heeding Psalm 34, you know, kind of thoughts here is to hide our problems or just wish them away. Psalm 34 said that there's no shadow of shame that was threatening him. I think we all tend to hide in shadows at times when we have problems or isolate. We don't want to deal with them or we pretend like they're not there. You know, because who wants to be in that space of their spirits being crushed or being brokenhearted? It's not a good place to be in. You know, so we'd rather pretend, you know, put on a happy face, fake it, you know, till we make it. You know, just like turn that frown upside down. I was thinking about this commercial from the Super Bowl. I don't know if you caught this, but I have it here, I think. Let's see if we could play it for you. Eddie, get the lights.
I hate Mondays.
Yeah, they're the worst.
No worries, man. Everything will be all right.
Yeah, man.
Come on. Don't fret me, brother. Sticky bun comes soon. Yeah. Wicked coffee, Mr. Jim. Julia, turn the frown the other way around.
Hey, Dave, you're from Minnesota, right?
Yes, I. The land of 10,000 lakes. The Gopher State.
So in conclusion, things are pretty dismal.
You know what this room needs? A smile. Who wanna come with I?
Traveling along, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
You guys are 3 minutes late.
Don't be no cloud on a sunny day.
Yeah, chill, Winston.
Sir?
Respect, boss man.
We'll make you happy.
That's the power of German engineering.
So that's a bit of the vibe in Jamaica as well, positivity. And it has a lot to recommend it, you know, it really does. I mean, this series about, you know, things are better than you think. And so it's about kind of seeing the good in life. And our nation actually has adopted that historically as like something that we don't want to, you know, believe in our problems. We believe in ourselves. We're better than that. And so in like the 20s and the 30s, that was a big thing. And people kind of passed that on to their kids. And I think that was a big part of what the United States was up until the 60s. I think the 60s, people started realizing that that didn't feel real to them, and maybe it's even repressive, you know, or manipulative. And so they started mocking it. And so you got things like, you know, Monty Python as like a child of the 60s. They would make their movies. I don't know if you've seen some of them, but you have Jesus on a cross, dying on the cross, singing a little happy song. Always look on the bright side of life, you know. Or it would, you know, I don't think it was really mocking Jesus. I think it was mocking their parents. And then you get, you know, I don't know if you've seen the Holy Grail with the Black Knight. You know, he's getting his limbs whacked off, and he's saying, "Oh, it's just a flesh wound." You know, the sense there is that it's, you know, things are better than you think by ignoring what's actually going on in your life. And that culture actually has been in churches a lot. I remember when I first went into a Vineyard church, which is what this is part of, and I was like kind of blown away by the realness of people, because all the church culture I've experienced in my life was different. It just was like, you know, what was more important was putting on this mask that everything was okay. It was like plastic church. And yet what was important in Vineyard churches was, I mean, the Vineyard is a part of like the 60s era. The music came from that era. And so it's, of course, it's a reaction to the church culture before that. But I even still feel today, sometimes churches could feel like that. Maybe I could feel like that. You could feel like that coming in church. Like what's more important is everybody knowing that I'm like, you know, trying to praise God in all things, but not actually sharing what's actually going on in my life, not actually being open to that. And I think that even this week, one of the things I got from the experience is realize, you know, life is too quick and too important to have to be fake. you know, to not actually see life as it is and to deal with life and kind of experience all the emotions, even if you have to let off some steam and be goofy at times as well. So I'm curious, you know, just even rhetorically, I asked you the question, do you think you have any problems in your life with these kind of approaches, with trying to, you know, kind of giving the fear and worry or blaming or hiding their problems or wishing them away? Because, you know, my theory, this is the normal way that we deal with our problems, but that God actually has a different way and a better way where we could actually experience really the great life. So let's look at what Psalm 34 is offering us as ways to actually deal with our problems. First off, the psalm invites us to go straight to God and ask for help. Go straight to God and ask for help. I think that's the whole premise, isn't it? I mean, he didn't say, hey, remember that time whenever I had to, you know, fake being insane to kind of get out of that jam I was in? And wasn't I so smart? He didn't say that, you know? He says, I prayed to the Lord and he answered me. In my desperation, I prayed and the Lord listened. The Lord hears his people when they call for him for help. He rescues them from all their troubles. That seems, I think, too simple for us, you know, because we are smart, strong, independent people. We can deal with our problems. We don't have to, like, you know, push them off to somebody else, you know. We can figure it out. And yet, you know, Psalms particularly, but the Bible really pushes this point. Here's another Psalm, Psalm 50, that says, from God's perspective, it says, if I were hungry, I would not tell you, for all the world is mine and everything in it. Do I eat the meat of bulls? Do I drink the blood of goats? He's referring to these animal sacrifices that the people are making to God, and he's asking a rhetorical question. No, I don't eat these animals. He says, make thankfulness your sacrifice to God and keep the vows you made to the Most High. Then call on me when you are in trouble, and I will rescue you and you will give me glory. At this point, whenever this was written, Israel thought their relationship with God was about what they could give to God. That was what they're focused on. So they're doing all these sacrifices. And God, I guess in this kind of offbeat kind of humor, says, I don't need that. I don't eat those kind of things, you know. I can take care of myself. Thank you very much. He's saying, if you want to do something good for me, if you want to give me something, go get yourself in trouble and then ask me for help and I'll rescue you. That's what I'm into. That's what I want to do in this world. That's what gives me glory. That's what makes me look better. And I just think, man, we don't think God is like that. I don't know why. Maybe it's because we see God, maybe like we see ourselves or other people. But God seems to really delight in doing good to us. It's not the exception that he makes just out of his mercy. It's what would make a good day for God is to rescue us. That's what he's into. We get this other spot here, Psalm 91. Those who live in the shelter of the Most High will find rest in the shadow of the Almighty. This I declare about the Lord. He alone is my refuge, my place of safety. He is my God, and I trust him. For he will rescue you from every trap and protect you from deadly disease. He will cover you with his feathers. He will shelter you with his wings. This is kind of a bird imagery. His faithful promises are your armor and protection. Do not be afraid of the terrors of the night, nor the arrow that flies in the day. Do not dread the disease that stalks in darkness, nor the disaster that strikes at midday. The Lord says, I will rescue those who love me. I will protect those who trust in my name. When they call on me, I will answer. I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue and honor them. I will reward them with a long life and give them my salvation. So there's a lot of power, apparently, with God in wanting to rescue us. And it's not restricted to people that have their acts together. In fact, it's the opposite. It's people that are in trouble, but are smart enough to go to God for help, you know, that love God and love God in this particular way, that they trust God. They're saying, God, whatever it is you say, I'm obeying it, I'm doing it, and I'm looking for you to take care of me. And sometimes that type of help comes fast. I've seen in my life, and I've seen people in our church, you know, often every Sunday we pray for somebody to be healed of something, some physical problem they're having. And it's quite frequent that someone in the midst of a prayer is healed of something big or small or whatever it is. Sometimes it happens fast. Other times it seems to take a lot longer. It's not as clear cut, but there's still real rescue there. I know a lot of students are in their, like, last week of school right now, and I've heard a lot of their woes of, like, this inconquerable amount of work they have to get done. They don't know how they get done, and yet they turn to God, and something happens. They feel like God gives them some help, you know, some kind of aid in the trouble. Maybe it's just peace in the moment, or maybe it's some new ideas, or maybe it's just a whole perspective change where they feel like, man, like, you know, God has actually given me a whole new lease on life, and, like, he's with me, and good things are happening. Even the strong young lions sometimes go hungry, but those who trust in the Lord will lack no good things. I think that's a picture of life that I really want, that God is there to rescue me. I don't have to be afraid. Secondly, do everything you can to bring peace to those around you. Back to this surprising advice that David gives in Psalm 34, he starts off talking about, you know, he wants to teach us to fear the Lord. That's a really important thing to him. And sometimes the word fear, I think, is confusing for us when he uses it, because in our modern English understanding of it, I think it's different. I think the context of what fear means for him is be concerned about what God has to say. And I think particularly as we see the concern that he has as he's looking for, like, you know, rather than facing, you know, his problems on his own, rather than just kind of, you know, seeing his thoughts dominated by the fear, he's like, you know, what does God have to say about this? And the implication of it is he wants me to do what he wants me, you know, what is clearly right, what obey his laws in the context of relationships. Often I think, like, obeying God's commands is about morality, things that are right or wrong, and it's, you know, what God is mad about me. But in this context, he says, keep your tongue from evil and lies and pursue peace and work to maintain it. So he says, you know, if you're talking bad about a person, you're probably talking bad about a person, not just a thing. You know, sometimes I feel like, well, I could complain about the government, that's fair game, or other issues that out there in the world, a church or you know, its organization, my job, whatever. And if I'm complaining about that, actually the truth is I'm complaining about a person, right? Because the people leading these things out there. And I think what David is saying is, no, pursue peace. Right, and when you're making peace, you're not making peace with an object or a group or a structure. You're making peace with people, and so I think that's what David is intending, is to try to help us work through issues in our life. That is really fear of the Lord, is as we work out our issues with other people. I've had some bad issues with past jobs I've had. I was remembering back to this time I worked here in the city, and I had this really bad boss that just was always negative and always just mean. And I think she had something out against me particularly, but I think she was also just negative in general. And so I was in a bad mood, you know. I mean, of course, it was the normal circumstance. But I remember after kind of months of it, just I was like in a funk. I just like decided to pray about it. I guess I went to step number one, you know, take it to God and ask for help. And I felt like God said, you know, you got to change your attitude here. You know, you think like she's the problem, she's the one, you're blaming it all on her. It's a tough job, you know, and she has some issues that, you know, things happen to her, but then you have your own part. How good of an employee are you, you know, and you could work on these things, and you could work on your attitude at least towards her. And I think that was like the fear of God, you know, put into me, like, oh yeah, it's actually not that good. And as I changed my attitude towards her, I really saw her change. We actually, when I left there about a month or two later, we parted on really good terms. It was like this fast turnaround. We like hugged each other, and it was like it was a really positive thing. It's funny because since I left that job, I've been back to the store, and it's not positive. You know, I remember the first time walking in, and I thought it was all good, so I tried to give her a hug, and she like rejected my hug, you know? And I'm like, oh, well, I guess we're back there. But I haven't had any of those feelings. I just felt like, you know, like it's, I have no fear going in there. Normally I want to isolate. I don't want to be around this person. No, actually, I could just be in that situation. It's fine. So go after peace. And as I was thinking about this sermon is things are better than you think. The sense I have of it is that we do have a choice in the matter in all this, you know, to actually find peace with people in the midst of problems. I think that's actually just right up the alley of experiencing a better life than we actually think. And I think that perspective change could really make a difference. I'm thinking just even in terms of terrorism and the major issue that it is in our world today. And I started thinking, well, what are some of the other major issues, large-scale problems, evils that we had to face as a world, and how have we done it? I started thinking back to the civil rights movement. I think that was one of like the you know, kind of biggest large-scale thing that our nation has faced in terms of evil and trying to face it in a way that I think was really good. So I'm a big fan of the civil rights movement. If you're not aware, the civil rights movement kind of got started in like the 1940s and really peaked in the 1960s. And I love it because there's so many like ways I think of people reacting and treating each other in a bad way in one side, but in such a good way in the other side. So I think of this one guy, John Lewis. John Lewis is a congressman currently. He's like 100th term from Atlanta, Georgia. He's just like this long-term congressman. But In 1961, he was this young man, so that's 51 years ago, and he was one of the original Freedom Riders. The Freedom Riders was a group of black and white individuals that were really trying to test out the new laws that were in place about desegregation in the inner state kind of bus systems. And so they would ride in the white-only section on these buses to try to, like, you know, peacefully in a nonviolent way. They were trying to, like, spread desegregation and racial equality across the whole South. And as he would do this, he would get beaten badly. He just over and over, and he kept on getting back on the bus. And at one point, he almost was beaten to death. This was in Selma, Alabama, on this Edmund Pettus Bridge. He was walking across the bridge, and there was, like, you know, police there, and they had their weapons and everything. And they started beating him, but he never fought back. He just kept on just in a nonviolent way pursuing peace and not caving in to either fear and saying, well, it's too much trouble, I don't want to do it, or violence. Like, I have to get them back. And I just think, man, of course, their side prevailed, justice was served, but even more than that, this guy has lived out the long life of good days. You know, he has all this great experience in the past, but also it's continuing today. It's made him a better person today. So I just wonder that what our response is, just to people in our life, as well as, you know, as a region or as Boston or as a nation, to the world as we respond. How do we respond in a good way? And thirdly, embrace hope and shun despair. Embrace hope and shun despair. I think despair is reasonable. I think this is just normal. I think it's something that we all feel, but that God is actually promising something better for us. I think my favorite passage in the Bible this year is this one we read today. God is close to the brokenhearted, right? That he rescues those whose spirits are crushed, that no one who takes refuge in him will be condemned. No one is going to be, you know, judged or rejected or punished or left alone. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, and I heard a story about a friend of hers. She was in another church, and she was saying that this friend suffered 2 miscarriages in 1 year. And that the first miscarriage, she was able to grieve through it pretty well. She knew it was a daughter. She had the pictures, and so she was able to connect with that child and kind of go through it. The second child, she didn't have that same experience, and so it was coming up on Christmas, and she thought, well, I'm fine. Let's just get through it. And she was a host, and so she hosted all Christmas and everything. But then when January came around, she just crashed. She just realized she's not fine. She's all these emotions she hasn't figured out yet, and so she's angry, and that turned into bitterness, and started despairing. She started feeling like, you know what, I don't even know if I want to have kids, and I don't know where God is and all this. And she said, you know, I have to do something about that. I got to go to God. And so she's an artist, and so she went to the studio of hers and started painting. She wanted, like, a commemorative picture of her child. But as she did that, she started getting really angry, and she said it to God, which is, I think, a good thing. She started saying all the problems she has with God. She started cussing at, you know, top of her voice at God. And so she's painting really angrily and all this. She said then something just happened. She saw before her, like, instead of her picture, like, this field, and this, like, young boy in this, like, soccer uniform kind of come into the field, kind of bouncing around like an 8-year-old would. And she had named her son, and so she said, God, is that, you know, him? And she felt like what came to her mind was, yes, that's him, and he's very, very happy. And this in this picture, this child came up to her and put his hands on her face, and she said she could feel the touch of this child. And it just totally changed everything for her. It really just made a huge impact, as you would imagine it would. And I just think, well, she did the right thing. She went to God in her despair. She didn't just stay in it. She just didn't give into it. She rejected. She believed that God had something better for her. She had hope, and she went after that, and God came through for her in this really incredible way. And finally, invite others to celebrate God's goodness with you. I'm getting this from, come, let us tell of the Lord's greatness. Let us exalt his name together. And come, my children, listen to me. I will teach you to fear the Lord. So it seems like David is looking for other people to join in with him with this. He wants to mentor them and learning the good stuff that he has. He wants us to do this together. And I just think, well, that's the experience of this person. I'll call her Karen. Karen, she actually came back from that experience, and she called together a small group and called together her friends and called together my friend and told them about this experience. They all prayed together. They sang to God together, and just were able to share it in the goodness and even share it with me and to us, I guess, now. And I just think, you know, as I'm looking over our week, there's a lot of grieving that happened, but a lot more to come. There's a lot of sadness from what happened from this whole experience. the innocent life that was lost, the harm that was done physically and emotionally to people. Even I'm grieving for these perpetrators, you know, that their life would take that turn and go that direction is just so sad. At the same time, you know, you could see even after they captured the second son, if you're watching the news, there was a celebration like, hey, you know, the world is a little bit better right now. Everything is a little bit safer. And David has this reaction in Psalms, I think it's 118. Do we have it on the screen? Yeah, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. He's not saying when everything's all better, that day is the day the Lord has made and let's rejoice then. He's saying today, whatever you're going through in life, in the midst of whatever troubles, today is the day the Lord has made. Rejoice and be glad in this. And so there's a little bit of a litmus test, a little question just to ask to see if you are taking full advantage of everything that God has for you right now in the midst of your troubles and experiencing his life. The question is, in the middle of your troubles, can we describe our lives as free from fear and radiant with joy? I wonder if you just take 10 seconds to kind of think about that question or answer it or ask God that question. It does seem strange to think about what Psalms is pitching here as possible or real, but you know, I really believe that it is what God has for any of us that wants that offer to experience, you know, him and experience goodness in the midst of it. It's not based upon us. If you read Psalm 34, David is not the major player there. David is not the one that made everything work out. It's that God came through. God's powerful. God's there. God does care. And on his own, David couldn't do that, right? David was in a situation that he couldn't, you know, be rescued from himself, or at least emotionally, he couldn't process that through. God needed to be alive and real to him to help him make it through. And so things, I think, are better than you think as you turn to God, as you take that offer seriously to go to him and help, get that help, get that, you know, peace, get that sense of his presence. And that's not when everything is better. That's not whenever people stop doing what we don't want them to do or do what we want them to do. It's actually right now in the midst of our troubles today. And I've seen this now in my life, and I've seen this in other people's life in big problems. I was seeing it in small problems. I feel like, you know, we take sometimes God seriously on big terms, but man, he seems to care about the minute details of our life as well, to care about showing us his love and showing us connection and peace in the midst of little minor details as well, to give us a long and prosperous life to any of us that want to take advantage of that. Would you stand with me? I'd like to pray for us to have more of that great life in our life. And the band could come up while I pray. God, I thank you for the good things that have happened this week, all the people that were motivated to help each other, people motivated to pray. God, I also am just sad and angry and, you know, pissed off at the damage that was done to so many people, but, you know, lives that were lost and families really, really hurt. God, I can't imagine being in the shoes of some of these people, but I do feel like, God, well, you are near the brokenhearted. You know, you are there to rescue people whose spirits are crushed. And I've seen it in my life, God, I believe you're doing it for those who are in the midst of some of the feelings of this tragedy. And God, I'm, of course, as you know, it's been pointed out, you know, there's problems like this happen every day around the world, and there's problems happening, you know, in Texas and other places, and I just feel like, yeah, God, there's a lot of problems, and I feel sad about that. But you're a big God. And God, I trust you that in the midst of all the troubles in the world and the troubles of my personal life, God, that you're able to take care of things. You can rescue. You can do good, even when we don't see it, but you are there, God. God, I pray specifically for those of us who haven't felt like they've seen any of that actually in their life or in the world. I pray that you'd show it to them, that they could taste and see that you are good. God, and I do pray you bless the rest of our service together. In Jesus' name, amen.